Part 3.
Well, and here we are again,
Hafdey Sorval said to the three of us.
And how completely unsurprising this seems to me.
Sorval's audience consisted of Ambassador Abumwe, Ambassador Lowen, and me as their joint underling for the meeting. Sorval had her own underling with her, if one could genuinely call Venak Oi, the head of intelligence for all of the conclave, an underling. Sorval and the ambassadors were sitting, Oi and I standing. I was doing a lot of standing in meetings recently. We five were in her private study at Conclave headquarters. On the other side of the door, literally and figuratively, were ambassadorial staff and experts and advisors from Earth, from the Colonial Union, and from the Conclave. If one was quiet, one could feel their combined howling frustration at not being in the room at the moment.
May I be honest with you?
Lowen asked Sorval. I noted that I found it difficult to think of her as Danielle when she was on the job, not because she materially changed her personality when she was working, but simply out of respect for her position.
Ambassador, I believe the point of this current discussion is to be honest with each other, is it not?
Sorval asked.
I assume that there would be more of us in the room for this discussion.
Sorval smiled one of her absolutely terrifying to humans smiles.
I believe each of our staffs thought the same thing, Ambassador,
she said.
But I have always found that there is an inverse relationship between the number of people in a room and the amount of useful work that can be done. Now that I am the person in charge of things, I find it even more so. Do you not?
No,
Lowen said.
I think you're right, by and large. Of course I am. And, Madame's Ambassador, I believe that the reason we are here is to have a definitively useful meeting, are we not?
It is to be hoped,
Abumwe said.
Precisely,
Sorval said.
So no, Ambassador, I believe we have precisely the correct number of people in the room.
Yes, Premier Sorval,
Lowen said.
Then let's not waste any more time.
Sorval turned her attention to Abumwe.
You may begin, Ambassador.
Premier Sorval, Equilibrium intends to attack the Earth with nuclear weapons and make it appear to the Colonial Union that it is the Conclave that initiated the attack.
Yes,
Sorval said.
Venak Oi here gave me a précis of the report you prepared for us. I assume you are going to ask us for our help in thwarting the attack, seeing that we are meant to be blamed for it.
No, Premier,
Abumwe said.
We want the attack to proceed.
Sorval reared back slightly at this, looked over to Lowen and then back at Abumwe.
Well,
she said after a moment,
this is certainly a bold and unexpected strategy. I'm fascinated to learn how this will be beneficial to any of us, not least the poor irradiated citizens of Earth.
Lieutenant, Abumwe said to me,
we want the attack to proceed because we need to draw out Equilibrium, I said. The group is small, driven, and has been difficult for us, any of us, to locate and attack. The one successful attack against the group as a whole was by Rafe Dockween when he escaped from their control. But other than that, they've been very good at working in the shadows.
Yes, they have,
Oi said.
We have purged known Equilibrium operatives, as I'm sure both Earth and the Colonial Union have.
Abumwe and Lowen both nodded here.
But at this point, they don't appear to need any additional operational intelligence to continue their plans.
Or they simply have new allies,
Abumwe said.
Either way, your man is correct.
Oi motioned to me with a tendril.
We found their new base,
Abumwe said.
Where?
Asked Oi.
On Sedna, I said. A dwarf planet on the edge of Earth's solar system.
We confirmed it just before Ambassador Abumwe's ship skipped here.
Then this conversation should be about how you've wiped them out already,
Sorval said.
It's more complicated than that,
Abumwe said.
We know where their new base is, but their fleet, the fleet with which they intend to wipe out Earth, isn't there, I said. They're showing cautiousness.
So even if the Colonial Union destroyed the base, Earth would still be vulnerable to attack, Lowen said. That's why we need the attack to proceed, Obumwe said. Draw out the ships over Earth and simultaneously destroy Equilibrium at their base. Leave nowhere for either element to go.
I'm still not clear how this involves the Conclave, Sorval said.
We can't do both, I said. Equilibrium will only act if it's confident the Colonial Union has no way to respond to their attack on Earth. We need to commit a substantial portion of our CDF fleet to give the appearance we're threatening the nine planets declaring their independence. We need to be seen taking ships away from the skip drive line to make it look like it would take days for our ships to respond to an attack on Earth. We also have to have enough ships to immediately respond to Equilibrium's attack, hidden where it would not think to look for them. We need to be sure we have enough ships to keep even a single nuke from making it to the Earth's atmosphere. That means generously overestimating the number of ships we need.
So you'll need the Conclave to attack the Equilibrium base, Oi said.
Yes, Obumwe said. And we want you to allow us to hide a fleet in Conclave space at skip distance so we can respond immediately to the Equilibrium attack on Earth. We don't believe Equilibrium will look for our fleet in your space.
That means trusting you not to attack whatever system we'd put you in, Oi said.
You don't have to trust us, Obumwe said. Put whatever protections you like on us. Just give us a place to park our fleet.
And you?
Sorval turned her attention to Lowen.
It's still the general consensus on your planet that the Colonial Union engineered the attack on Earth Station and killed thousands, including much of your global diplomatic corps. You're telling me that the Earth trusts them?
She flicked a hand to encompass Obumwe and me.
To protect you from annihilation?
It wasn't an easy sale, no,
Lowen admitted.
This is where the Conclave comes in again. Our assent for this plan is contingent on your acceptance. If you don't trust the Colonial Union, we don't trust it.
And what then?
Sorval asked.
What if I don't, in fact, trust it?
Then we give you everything we have on the attack, Obumwe said.
We give it to you and pray that, despite your recent actions, you are willing to protect the Earth. You did before. Your predecessor, General Gao, did, at the very least.
We wouldn't do that out of the goodness of our souls, Sorval said. If we intervened to the benefit of the Earth, you can assume that we would no longer be dissuaded from pulling it into our sphere of influence. So, Ambassador, you're asking me to believe that the Colonial Union could accept that, and even accept possibly in time, allowing the Earth to join the Conclave?
The Colonial Union accepts at this point that the Earth is lost to us, Obumwe said, nodding at Lowen. We have told as much to the governments on Earth that will still speak to us. It will no longer be the captive source of our soldiers and colonists. We are now beginning to make the changes that will allow us to survive in this new reality. That being the case, we no longer factor the Earth's participation, voluntary or otherwise, into our plans. We do not want to see it as part of the Conclave, but better the Earth is in the Conclave than destroyed. It is humanity's home, Premier.
Sorval nodded and turned to Oi.
Your analysis, please.
This is a lot, Premier,
Oi said.
And from a people we have no historical reason to trust at all.
I understand that, Sorval said. For the moment, treat the information given as accurate.
Then leaving aside the moral issue of leaving a planet open to a genocidal attack, there's very little upside here for the Conclave, Oi said. Both the Earth and the Colonial Union need something from us, but offer no benefit to us outside the destruction of Equilibrium, which we could now attack ourselves and cripple operationally. They need us, but we don't need them. And bluntly, there are hundreds of our member species who would be happy to be rid of either or both. There's still no way politically that we could bring Earth into the Conclave without tearing it apart.
You're saying we shouldn't be involved, Sorval said.
Should is a relative term, Oi said. Remember that I am leaving aside the moral dimension of this for the moment. What I am saying is that if we do get involved, there is almost no upside to it for us.
Except, perhaps, the gratitude of the two houses of humanity, Sorval said. Oi snorted at this.
With no offense to our human friends here, Premier, I wouldn't set any great store in the gratitude of humanity.
Too true,
Sorval agreed.
So you won't help us,
Abumwe said.
No, I won't, Sorval said. Not without obvious benefit for me, for the Conclave.
What do you want? Loen asked.
What do I want?
Sorval repeated to Loen, and leaned in toward the human ambassadors, accentuating just how large a creature she was relative to our species, and also how exasperated.
I want to not have to think of you, Ambassador Loen, or of you, Ambassador Abumwe, or of humanity at all. Can you understand this, Madame's Ambassador? Do you understand how truly tiring your people are? How much of my time has gone into dealing with humans?
Sorval threw up her hands.
Do you realize that I have seen the two of you, and you, Lieutenant Wilson, more in the past 2 of your years than I have seen the representatives of most of the Conclave's constituent members? Do you know how much of my predecessor's time was taken up with you? If I could magically wish humanity away, I would do it instantly.
It's a fair call, I said. Abumwe turned to look at me incredulously, and I was reminded that not too long ago she could hardly stand me. It might be we were about to be headed back down that road. Sorval noticed.
Don't glare at the Lieutenant Ambassador. He's perfectly correct, and I think you know it. It is a fair call. Humanity is more trouble than it's worth. However,
here the reluctance in Sorval's voice was palpable.
I cannot magically wish humanity away. I am stuck with you, both of you, and you with us. So, here is what I want in order to help you.
Sorval pointed to Abumwe.
From the Colonial Union, I want a comprehensive non-aggression treaty with full diplomatic trade relations, meaning no more of these nonsense back channels and saber-rattling. Once we eradicate equilibrium, we can jointly reveal everything we knew about it, end all speculation, and make the argument that a great deal of our recent hostility was manufactured by them. I can use that to push the treaty through the Grand Assembly, and you can use it to convince whoever it is you need to as well.
You're asking me to sell the Conclave as an ally,
Abumwe said.
Not at all. I don't think either of our governments is ready for that. I'm merely asking to no longer so actively and intentionally be at each other's throats.
Sorval turned to Loen.
Likewise, a non-aggression pact and full diplomatic and trade relations with Earth. I don't see how we can be aggressive toward the Conclave,
Loen said.
You can't,
Sorval agreed.
But it's not for the Conclave's protection, it's for yours, from us.
I understand.
Good,
Sorval said.
Finally, the same non-aggression pact and full diplomatic and trade relations between Earth and the Colonial Union. Because while for now I don't want you two merging back together, you entirely separated will always be a danger to the Conclave. For better or worse, for all our sakes, this division of humanity has to come to an end.
It's a three-way stalemate,
Oi observed.
It's perfect, I said.
It might be,
Sorval said.
Thus are we all bound to each other in a mutual agreement to leave each other alone, while still keeping open actual lines of communication and commerce.
It's a nice thought, Premier,
Oi said.
There's just one problem.
Everyone who is not in this room, Abumwe said.
Yes, Foy agreed. You said, Premier, that the more people involved, the longer things will take. This set of agreements will involve everyone. You're never going to get such a treaty through the Grand Assembly, and I doubt that Ambassador Abumwe will get sign-off from her people. And as for Ambassador Loewen, well, Earth doesn't even have a functional global government. She literally can't make an agreement that the entire planet will abide. This won't get done.
Fine, Sorval said. Then we don't let anyone outside this room have a vote.
They won't like that, Boy said.
Your head of intelligence is understating the case, I added.
I don't care, Sorval said. Everyone in this room understands this is a thing that should be done. We are all agreed to this, yes?
Abumwe and Loewen nodded.
Then let's call it done, Sorval said.
It's an imperial action,
Oi warned. No, I said. It's an opportunistic one. I turned to Loewen. The Louisiana Purchase.
You're speaking gibberish,
Loewen said. Go with me here, I said, and looked at Sorval. Back on Earth, a long time ago, a U.S. president named Thomas Jefferson was offered a deal on territory that would more than double the size of his country, the Louisiana Purchase. Technically speaking, he wasn't empowered to accept the deal. The U.S. Constitution was ambiguous about whether the president could authorize the purchase, but he did it anyway, because it doubled the size of the country. And then what was Congress going to do? Give it back?
We're not buying land, Lieutenant, Abumwe pointed out.
No, but you're buying something else. Peace, I said. And you're buying it by mutually acting against equilibrium, which exists to bring the end of the conclave and the colonial union and is planning immediate harm to Earth, with immediate consequences for the conclave and the colonial union. So don't wait. Premier Sorval is right. Agree to terms here and now and present it as a fait accompli. Then get everyone busy with punching equilibrium in the throat. We stand or fall together on this one. I prefer to stand.
By the time it's all done, it's too late to go back,
Oi said.
There's a new normal.
It's not a bad idea.
It's a terrible idea,
Oi said.
It just has the advantage of being better than the other option.
Is that your assessment as my head of intelligence?
Sorval asked Oi.
My assessment as your head of intelligence is that the Colonial Union has consistently shown itself to be the greatest single threat to the Conclave, and Earth isn't much better,
Oi said.
If you have an opportunity to take them out of your equation, then do it. If it means presenting this as a done deal that isn't able to be taken back, do it. You'll get pushback and criticism for it. But you may still have the goodwill of the Grand Assembly for holding the conclave together.
Oi, will this work?
You're the premier of the conclave, madam, Oi said. If you want to make this work, it will. When you can tell them about it, mind you. We need to destroy equilibrium first. For that to work, it will need to be as covert as possible.
Sorval nodded and turned to Abumwe.
Can you agree to this?
Abumwe nodded.
Yes. Can you make it stick? I will tell them they have no other option but to make it stick. And you, Ambassador Loewen?
Sorval asked.
You're asking me if I can accept a deal that saves my planet from nuclear annihilation?
Loewen said.
I'm pretty sure I can sell it.
Don't sell it, I said. Present it as sold.
Agreed,
Oi said, and pointed to the door.
When we walk out of here, it's done.
Yes?
Sorval asked.
Yes,
Abumwe said.
Yes,
Loewen said. Sorval smiled, and it was terrifying and glorious.
And so we learn how simple it is to change the history of the universe.
Sorval said.
All you need is for every other thing to have gone so horribly wrong first.
She stood, with Abumwe and Loan following her example almost immediately.
Come, Madame's Ambassador, let us announce our new era of peace together. Let us dare anyone to take it from us, and then let us go to war together, for the first and hopefully last time.
2 weeks later, on October 2nd, using the standard calendar of the Colonial Union, and at roughly 3 in the afternoon, the Colonial Union received official notice from 9 of its colony worlds that they were declaring themselves independent from the Union. Each of these planets was independent of the others, but declared immediate diplomatic relations with each other and offered the same to the Colonial Union. In times past, the Colonial Union might have sent a single ship per planet to deal with the uprising. When a planet has no real defenses against you that you yourself did not create, you didn't have to make that much of an effort. But since the Turbigan event over Khartoum, it was evident that there had to be a change in strategy, and in the Colonial Union's response to rebellion, especially to a rebellion that involved multiple planets simultaneously. The skies above the rebellious worlds added new constellations as a flood of CDF ships flowed into their space. Each rebellious planet received no fewer than 100 ships. A piece of psychological warfare designed to cow and intimidate those trying for their freedom. They would not be cowed. They shouted their defiance and dared the Colonial Union to do its worst. This went on in a seemingly intractable manner. There was no clear end to the stalemate. The planets demanded the Colonial Union and the CDF withdraw from their skies. The Colonial Union replied that they would not. The large majority of the human military fleet was now permanently stationed above the worlds that it used to protect. On October 21, a ship appeared in the skies above Earth, a trading ship registered to a world of the Conclave. It was the Hu Isatun, and it had disappeared almost a year before. In a moment, the Hu Isatun was no longer alone as another ship of Conclave ancestry appeared, and another. A student of recent history would recognize the staggered appearance as a bit of theater. The late General Tarsim Gao, when he was the head of the Conclave, would do the same thing when his grand fleet appeared over the sky of an unauthorized colony. The Conclave would then give the colony the choice of being evacuated or destroyed. The Earth would not have the same choice. The fleet would follow the same dynamic as Gao's fleet, waiting until the very last ship arrived, waiting until the audience below could register its immensity before launching its weapons to destroy those watching below. Which meant that timing was going to be a tricky thing indeed. The satellites the Colonial Union placed in orbit around the Earth registered the Hu Isatun the second it arrived in Earth space. The data was shot at the speed of light to a brace of very special skip drones located at the L4 Lagrangian point in the Earth-Moon system, each carrying the prototype skip drive designed to work at those gravitationally flat spots in space. 3 of the drones skipped immediately. One of them arrived at its destination as a topographically interesting shower of metal shards. The other 2 arrived intact. And in a space outside the solar system that housed Premier Hafde Sorval's home world of Lala, 2 fleets readied their final preparations for attack. The first fleet was a small one, 10 ships, specifically selected by VNAC Oi. The second one was substantially larger. 200 CDF ships had waited, for battle. Back at Earth, the influx of ships had stopped at 108. A number ever so slightly higher than either the Colonial Union's or Conclave's estimates of the fleet. Their first action would be to begin disabling the Earth's network of satellites. This would take it several minutes. The satellites marked the position of each of the fleet's ships above the Earth and shot that information to the waiting skip drones. 3 of them immediately skipped. This time all 3 made it. Inside the CDF ships, each of them was receiving a list of their primary, secondary, and tertiary targets. This transfer of information and the acknowledgement thereof took on average 10 seconds. 20 seconds after that, every single CDF ship simultaneously skipped into Earth space, including the Chandler, who alone among the fleet did not have targets. Its job was to observe. On the Chandler were Ode Obomwe, Colonels Egan and Rigney, and Vianak Oi of the Conclave. Well, and me. From Neva Bala's bridge, we watched as CDF ships appeared less than a kilometer from their primary target ships and surgically attacked with particle beams and other relatively low-carnage armament, pinpointing propulsion, navigation, and weapons systems.
"Put the comms on speaker, please," Obomwe asked Bala,
who nodded and did Obomwe's bidding. The air was a cacophony of CDF ships reporting back, confirming their attacks were successful. In less than 2 minutes, the entire Equilibrium fleet had been disabled. Disabled, not destroyed.
"Are you ready?"
Obomwe asked Rafe Dockween.
"You know I am,"
Dockween responded. Obomwe smiled at this.
"Then begin."
"Pilots of the attacking ships," Dockween said, and his words were broadcast to each of the ships we had disabled. When we could make a reasonable guess as to the identity and species of the pilot of the ship, we automatically translated Dockween's words into their language. Otherwise, we relied on the ships having translation software.
"My name is Rafe Dockween, the pilot of the Chandler. I am like you. My ship was attacked and taken by an organization I learned was called Equilibrium. Equilibrium killed my crew and singled me out as a pilot. They took my body from me and forced me, like you, to pilot my ship alone and to do their bidding. We know that you have been forced into this attack. We know that you were offered a terrible bargain for your complicity. Death if you refused and the promise of your bodies returned if you accepted. You should know Equilibrium never intended to return you to your bodies. To them, you are disposable. You are always disposable. After this attack, you would have been killed and your ships destroyed in order to preserve their goals and their anonymity. You may not have been made fully aware of the scope of your mission. It was to attack this planet, the planet Earth, with nuclear weapons. Those weapons would have obliterated life there, and the lingering after-effects would have made the planet uninhabitable. We, who are human, and for whom this is our home world, could not allow that to happen. We have stopped you from carrying out your mission. We have attacked your ships. We could have easily destroyed them and you. We choose not to do this. We have not destroyed your ships. We have not destroyed you. We did not because we know you did not have a choice. We know because I did not have a choice when I was in the same position as you. We are giving you a choice now. The choice is this. Surrender your ships now, and we will care for you, protect you, return you to the Conclave, alive and intact, so you may go home, be with your families, and, God willing, be given new bodies to live your lives. Some of you may already be trying to repair your ship systems to carry out your mission. If you do, we will have to stop you. If we have to stop you, we may have to destroy you. The weapons you carry have too much death in them. We can't allow the launch of a single one. I am like you. I am still like you. I have stayed this way because I was waiting for a moment like this. So you would know, you would truly know that you are not alone and that you are not without a choice. That you don't have to kill in order to live. That your life can be returned to you, and all you have to do is spare the innocent people that an organization who has enslaved you wants you to kill. I am Rafe Dockween. I am like you. I live, and I am no one's slave. I am here to ask you to surrender now. Surrender and live. Surrender and let others live. Tell me what you will do."
And then we waited. For close to a minute, there was dead silence on the comms. And then,
"I am Chugli Ago, pilot of the Freneril. I surrender to you, Rafe Dockween."
"Ie, ie, no. Pilot of Chundawut. I surrender. Lobi Nagunawia Sunda Wanoan of the Lutzen. Holy shit, human, get me the fuck out of this thing."
"I am Tondospen. I pilot the Hu Isatun. I want to see my family. I want to go home.
I helped Rafe write that. I just want that out there. 104 of the pilots surrendered their ships. 2 sabotaged their internal systems after the attack and before Rafe sent his message, committing suicide. I guess from fear of what would happen if they were captured, or from fear of what Equilibrium would do to them if they were captured. 1 pilot had what could be best described as a psychotic break and was unable to surrender or indeed do much of anything else. We took the pilot out of the control loop of its ship before it could hurt itself or anyone else. 1 pilot refused to surrender, managed to repair his weapons systems, and tried to launch his nukes. His ship was destroyed before the nukes were out of their tubes.
"You're going to get credit for this," Oi said to Abumwe as the surrender notices came in. "You've spared the lives of pilots of dozens of conclave species. They'll remember it. It was smart."
"It was his idea," Abumwe said, pointing to me.
"Then it was smart of you," Oi said.
"Thank you," I said. "But I didn't suggest it to be smart." Oi dropped its tendrils in acknowledgement. As the surrender notices came in, we received the first news from the Conclave attack on Equilibrium's base on Sedna. The Conclave chose not to wipe out the Equilibrium members it found there. Instead, it disabled the base's life support and communication systems and destroyed any ship or vehicle capable of getting anyone in the base out of it. Then the commander of the mission gave those inside the base a choice. Surrender, or not so slowly freeze to death. Most chose not to freeze. In the coming weeks and months, the scope of Equilibrium was revealed, its agents named, and its ability to wreak havoc on the Conclave, the Colonial Union, or Earth negated. In the end, it was difficult to believe that Equilibrium could have ever presented a threat at all. But then it never would have, had the Colonial Union, the Conclave, and Earth not been so determined to be a threat to themselves.
"Interesting times we live in,"
Danielle Lowen said to me. She and I were at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C. Hart Schmidt was with us on his first trip to Earth, the surface of it at least. He was determined to be the most touristy tourist who had ever touristed, and was presently snapping pictures of the statue of Jefferson from every conceivable angle. It was late March, and the cherry blossoms were beginning to bloom. "You know, there's a curse about living in interesting times," I said to her. "It's attributed to the Chinese."
"Oh, that's a myth, you know," Danielle said. "The Chinese never said anything that foolish."
I smiled at this. "Ode says hello, incidentally," I said. Ode Obumwe, who had retired from active diplomatic duty to take on a new role, primary architect of the new constitution that the Colonial Union was creating with its colonies.
"How goes the nation building?" Danielle asked.
"When I last talked to her about it, she said it was an immense pain in her ass, but there was just no other alternative. Her deal with you and Sorval, ironically enough, served to force the Colonial Union to accept her deal with the rebellious colonies. They couldn't accept a fait accompli agreement with the Earth and Conclave and not accept one from their own colonies.
I think that's why she was appointed to run the discussions.
The higher-ups wanted to punish her."
"The irony being that they're making her the mother of the new Colonial Union. She's going to be remembered forever for that."
"If she can get a deal."
"This is Ode Obumwe, Harry," Danielle said. "As if she's not going to get a deal."
We watched Hart take his photos.
"I can't help but notice you're still not green," Danielle said to me. "I thought this natural skin tone thing was just supposed to be a summer look for you."
"I've been busy," I said.
"We've all been busy."
"All right, fine," I said. I also missed being this particular tone of me.
"Is this indicative of anything? Subconsciously or otherwise?"
Probably not."
"Right."
"Fine," I said. "I might be thinking of retiring."
"Hanging up the superbody and aging like a normal, decent human should?"
"Maybe," I said. "This is only an idle thought."
If nothing else, you can't say that the Colonial Union didn't get its money out of you, Harry.
No, I suppose not, I said.
If you did retire, where would you go? What would you do?
I haven't thought that far out.
I have an opening on my staff,
Danielle said. I don't want to work for you, Danny.
I'm a terrific boss, and I'll brutally sabotage the career of any underling who says different.
You should use that as a recruiting statement.
What makes you think I don't?
I smiled at this.
Hart was now photographing the bits of the Declaration of Independence carved into the walls of the monument.
Seriously, Harry, Danielle said after a minute, come back to Earth.
Why?
You know why,
she said.
And you can now.
Maybe I will, I said.
Maybe.
Don't rush me. I've got a lot to work out.
All right, Danielle said. Just don't take too long.
Fair enough, I said, and took her hand.
Interesting times we live in, Danielle repeated. That's not meant to be a curse. I like interesting. I like it now, anyway.
So do I said. She squeezed my hand.
This place is great, Hart said, coming up to the both of us.
Glad you like it, I said.
I really do, he said.
He looked at the both of us, excited.
So, what's next?